This is Mike Valentine from the Strobance Cardiovascular Center at Centra in Lynchburg, Virginia, and currently incoming president of the American College of Cardiology. I'll be your host for the podcast series, Practice Made Perfect, a new featuring with in-depth conversations with experts on topics related to career and leadership development necessary for young cardiovascular professionals to succeed in the changing healthcare landscape. Join us as we explore these critical subjects of non-clinical competencies in the weeks to come.
Hi, and welcome to the next podcast in our Practice Made Perfect series. Hopefully you have found the preceding podcast to help you as we start to understand the non-clinical competencies that really drive our day-to-day work. This podcast should be interesting, I think, for all of us, because what we're going to try to do in 15 or 20 minutes is look at physician compensation, look at the evolving trends, things that you might not have thought to look at before, trying to understand the best way to set up compensation models. It's always a very hot topic at our CV Summit that we host every year in January or February, and I've been in this world a long time. This is Kathy Biga. My day job is with about 60 providers in Chicago, and physician compensation is always a fascinating evening meeting. Whenever we decide to relook at our physician compensation distribution, I ensure that it's a dinner meeting, perhaps with a little bit of wine, always with some good food and good company, because the reality that I have found in deciding physician compensation is it really requires open dialogue. What I hope to do in this podcast is to walk you through some of the trends that we are seeing in compensation throughout the country. Also, to refer you back to acc.org, because we have done several physician compensation webcasts that I think you might find very interesting. It never ceases to amaze me that no matter how often we do this, this is a constantly changing topic. So we'll hopefully kind of go through the environmental trends, the difference between comp design and compensation distribution, the difference in practice settings and how contribution is handled, and a little bit about different ways of looking at compensation, such as time value units. It's always a very big conversation whenever we get together with members of the college and one that we cover extensively at the CV Summit. So let's start and see what we get. I also put in the slide deck that you'll see accompanied by this podcast a few questions specifically for our FITs and early careers, because as you're starting to look at different practices, once you come out of the shelter of your academic center, physician compensation is always a very difficult one for FITs to review. And I know that Dr. Mike Valentine and Jim Daniel went through some contract questions, and there's always that uneasiness. Whenever I interview FITs, I can always tell they're not quite sure, how do I ask about the money? We've gotten through all the clinical stuff, but how do I ask about the money? So hopefully this will help. And I will tell you that when I interview our FITs, I always bring it up because it's the elephant in the room and it's very important. Whether your salary is guaranteed or not, my suggestion is that you always go into at least your first year with a salary guarantee because you need time to ramp up. You need to understand if your base pay is consistent or whether it's productivity dependent. That's a very important component. How is call? We're going to talk a fair amount about call. How is it compensated? Is it the same for everybody? And then another area that is oftentimes not completely well understood, especially if you're going into private practice, is how do senior physicians transition out of call, or for that matter, transition out of the practice? How is that compensation handled? Because all of a sudden, if you're in a group of four or five, and the senior physician says, I'm not taking call starting next month, how does that really happen? Because the call burden and call frequency is a critical, important component of compensation. So let's talk about what is actually included in physician compensation. So there should be a base pay. Is it determined by productivity or is it the same for everybody? And productivity is something we'll talk about because right now the predominant way of measuring productivity is from work RVUs. Every single CPT code you bill has an RVU component. I always like to use EKGs as an example. Every EKG that you read is worth 0.17 work RVUs. So if you're going into a productivity-dependent compensation model, it will be important to understand how those work RVUs are allocated. Does your compensation include benefits? Well, let's talk about benefits for a second. There's the traditional ones, health, dental. What is your component of that? How much do you need to pay? and independent practices, because you own the practice with your colleagues, oftentimes you have to pay the full component of healthcare. And I would say most of us don't realize that family healthcare can run about $28,000 a year, sometimes $30,000 a year. So the cost of healthcare is really important. So is that part of your salary or is that a pure benefit? Who pays for that? Long-term disability, short-term disability, is there a cap? How much is that cap? What is the eligibility time frame? Very important. Medical malpractice, is that a benefit or is that something you have to pay for? If you choose to leave the practice, is there a tail involved? And those tails in Illinois can be very expensive. If you're a physician who's what we call fully rated, meaning that you've been in practice 2 or 3 years, you could have a tail of $80,000 to $100,000. So very important to understand where that fits in. And if you leave, who's responsible for that tail? Because often it's the physician. And then, of course, I know many of you who are listening are young, so you may not be thinking of pension, but do think about pension and profit sharing. Think about your 401ks, your 403bs, and something we are seeing an awful lot because of the employed component of cardiology is whether or not you have access to the unqualified 457Bs. That can be a very good benefit for you. So that is what you really need to look at from physician comp. So what's changing? As we talked about those environmental trends in physician compensation, if you listen to the podcast that we recorded earlier on the change into the value world, you'll know that we need to be understanding of how we get paid. So same thing translates to physicians. How will you be paid and what will you be graded on? These are what I think will be very important for the next 2 to 3 years. The coordination of care, how your care team delivery is based. What does your team look like? How do you share that delivery of care to your patients? Where's preventative care? How efficient are you? One of the key elements is patient outcomes. We didn't really talk about the quadruple aim, but you know it's very important for the college, specifically in Dr. Valentine's tenure as president, really looking at that quadruple aim. How satisfied are our patients? What is their outcome? How satisfied are our providers, which is the fourth part of that quadruple aim, and cost. Those are the four components of the quadruple aim. So you will be graded and perhaps paid on your outcomes. Quality metrics is patient engagement, patient satisfaction, all those types of things are very, very important. If you look at the slide deck, you'll see a number of slides in there that really talk about the ownership trends across the country. And ACC just finished a survey, again, that shows the continuing migration into employment. So as we do this compensation podcast, we are sort of talking about kind of a mixed bag from both a private practice to an academic practice to an employed group. It can be very different. But let's talk about some of the critical elements that I want you to think about as it relates to physician compensation. Number one is the elements of the compensation, specifically call. We talked about call at the beginning. How is call paid? Both the burden of call and the frequency of call. Do you have EP-only call? Do you have interventional for STEMI call? What happens if you get called in when you're not on call? You'll often find, specifically in private practice, that that can be a critical element as we have a double STEMI perhaps that comes in. So what is the compensation for being called in when you're not on call? The most important thing about call is to value it. How much is that worth in your total compensation package? You'll see across the country that it averages somewhere between 25 and 40%. I used to say the sweet spot was right around 30%, but we have found in the employed situation that the amount of money allocated per call has gone up a bit, specifically in the employed practices. So make sure that you value it. Make sure that you define call wind down. When I stop taking call Monday through Friday, what does that mean from a compensation perspective? When I come off weekend call, what does that mean? That's why in my practices, we value call right around 33%. So that if you start call wind down, that proportionately will hit your total compensation. And when you totally stop taking call, you will have a reduction in compensation. Depending on how much call was valued, in our world, it would be a drop in compensation of about 33%. You also want to make sure that the retirement path is defined. So not only when I wind down call, what if I want to wind down and not work full-time anymore? So very important to look at that. So how do you design a physician compensation model? A couple key design elements that are important. Number one is it has to be predictable. There has to be some stability to it. And this was unusual. Back in my days when I managed independent practices, there was obviously peaks and valleys in the practice, ebbs and flows and how revenue came in. How do you design a compensation model so that that is relatively stable? And you do that by setting a lower take-home or base salary. And you allow for those ebbs and flows by quarterly distributions, whether that's based on productivity or another methodology. Very important to have some kind of a predictable world. The one thing you don't want to have to do is ask for money back. It never goes over very well. So make sure your model allows for some predictable stability. Make sure it's conducive to alignment if you're trying to work with your hospital colleagues. Very important in an employed situation and equally important in our independence. Make sure that it's conducive to aligning with your hospital because we do compete for that technical component for imaging when we are independent. So base plus call would equal your take home. So that is the importance of that current income component. When you're designing your comp plan, you'll have to look at it from your clinical perspective. How many non-invasives do I need? How much subspecialization should we look at? What happens with all that subspecialization? You want to be careful if you're doing EP-only call. I would say that that was very prevalent. It still is in some areas of the country, not so much in other areas. So you have your clinical perspective, your legal perspective, the valuation perspective, which are those third-party people that determine fair market value. And then from a business perspective. So on slide 16 in the accompanying slide deck, you'll see some of those critical elements that are important. My favorite compensation models include the following components: your base, call, non-clinical or administrative functions. Number four is value, and number five is productivity. You will see a number that sort of shows what we're seeing across the country. There are still a few equal share groups. That means that everybody is paid exactly the same regardless of how many work RVUs we do. We have some practices that are fully production-based, kind of the eat what you kill mentality. So you still see those two endpoints. The most common, however, now is what we call a blended model. That blended model is a little bit of equal share and a little bit of productivity. And again, I'll use myself as an example. I have two groups, as some of you may know, and our groups look at this every single year. I would say a productivity amount of 20 to 30% is pretty common across the country. So if you think my call is worth 30%, we'll just use that for round numbers, my productivity is worth 30%. I have some administrative time because I want to be able to pay for those non-work RVU activities that are very important. And then you would have your base salary. So you can see if you design your compensation methodology in a manner that allows you to have these different buckets, it usually helps in a fair perspective. I probably should have started with that the absolute key to a successful compensation model is it has to be fair. Same with call. Nobody's going to be happy. My favorite CFO always said to me, as long as everybody's a little bit unhappy, we probably have a good call schedule or a good payment per call, because there's a push-pull and a tug whenever you're doing compensation design. So incentivizing, because that's an area, obviously, that we talked about. If you have a productivity component to your compensation, what would you incentivize? If you have non-clinical or quality, many of us have what we call joint operating committees or clinical co-management agreements. Those are all agreements that many times we have with our hospital partners, employed or not employed, tend not to see them too common academic worlds, but we do tend to see them in both our employed and independent world. They will often pay you on incentive metrics. So that's what we're talking about here. What type of incentive metrics really exist? Outcomes are important, your ACO performance, care coordination, strategic outreach, growth, meeting your macro and QPP. Remember that podcast that we just did on macro and QPP? Many organizations have built in those elements because it takes a lot of physician time, but you don't get one RVU for it. So how do we compensate for that non-work RVU component? Being bundle ready, We did not talk in our last podcast about the BPCI program. BPCI stands for the Bundled Payment Initiative. It's a voluntary bundle that is in the process of being rolled out. We have many hospitals and organizations that have built into their incentive component of compensation a bundle readiness element. How much of your compensation should be at risk? That's always a critical question. Call was easy, productivity is relatively easy, but what do I do about incenting these other components? How much of that should be at risk? We tend to talk that we would like it to be 15 to 20%, but in reality, when MedAxiom did their last survey, we show that the average across the country is much closer to 8 to 10%. So you can see we really haven't left our work RVU methodology of compensation. Most of us are still pretty driven by that work RVU. Why? Because it's easy. Every CPT code has it. It doesn't always equalize the playing field necessarily, but it is a way and probably why we have not left work RVU methodologies for quite some time. So that's the incentive component. Here's another component that you should think about, and this is probably more common in employed groups because in reality, independent groups probably do a pooled compensation. But you have two elements of compensation. One is the mechanism for how the compensation is derived, specifically if you're on a contract with a hospital. Do you get paid per work RVU? It's a revenue minus expense model. What is the mechanism to design that pool of money that will be used to pay the providers? That's what we call the compensation model. Then we have the distribution component. How does that pool get distributed? That pool versus individual has been a very hot topic in the legal world. I'm not sure if Jim Daniel touched on that in our legal talk, but can we really pool compensation because of the team effort? My opinion is if we're really going to migrate to this new value world, it takes a village to do that. We all need to be working together. Value, however, using that village will require a change in law because we have these little things called Stark and fraud and abuse and all these legal elements that we have to be very careful on as it relates to pooled versus individual compensation. It's why many employed physicians have individual contracts and individual compensation components. Personally, I'm not a fan of that. I think it segregates us. It kind of puts us in silos. I'm a much bigger fan of having our cardiologists work together as a team. But again, a very critical component in physician compensation. So let's talk for just a second about work RVUs. Is there any other way that we can really compensate besides work RVUs? In the slide deck, you'll see some very specific components of the TVU system. Now, what is that? TVU stands for time value units. Many of us went to a TVU system over RVUs a number of years ago. One of my practices has actually been using TVUs and their compensation methodology since 2001. What TVUs does is it actually looks at time motion studies. How long does it take you to read an EKG? How long does it take to read an echo? How long does it take to do a right heart cath, a left heart cath, a TAVR, an EVAR, a TVAR, doing a cardiac MR, doing a cardiac CT? Why do I like TVUs? I like them because you can move them according to the growth and the need. When TVARs, EVARs, structured heart first started, it took a lot of physician time. But if I looked at my work RVU compensation coming from Medicare and our private payers, it didn't equate to the time being used. So what the TVU system does, and across the country there are several different models, but the way we've used TVUs is every CPT code is crosswalked to a time value code. We look at those intently. We have physicians analyze them. We have interventional look at non-invasive, non-invasive look at intervention, and really try to come up with a solid mechanism to walk away from that RVU methodology. Now, I will say in the past that delta was much larger. Peripheral vascular procedures, for instance, were valued much higher than a right heart cath or left heart cath. That was the primary reason and driver why we went to a TVU. That's not quite the same anymore because a lot of that has been bundled, but we still find that TVU helps for another reason. We also use TVUs in non-clinical compensation, so windshield time, training of fellows, training of residents, research, outreach, strategic growth in clinics that may not be highly productive. It's an excellent way of being able to pay for non-work RVU components that really identifies the importance of physician leadership and physician time. So that's the main difference. TVUs, 1 minute equals one TVU. So very simple. Unlike a work RVU, 0.17 to read an EKG, 2 point something to do a level 3 visit in the office, you know, what does that really mean? So those are those differences between work RVUs and TVUs. So I might suggest, if you're looking to do something different that also can help you with your non-clinical component, that this might be a really good way of doing it. I also put in your slide deck just some different modeling that you can look at, looking at how you can migrate perhaps from a work RVU compensation component into something different, because I think our world of value will continue to move us out of that zone. That being said, I don't see us eliminating work RVUs for quite some time. It really is the only way that we can specifically measure some productivity. So until we truly get into that value world, we've truly made that leap, I do think that some of this work RVU components will be very, very important. So let's kind of conclude this and look at it. What does your physician compensation look like? You know, do you have a base salary? Do you have to have a minimum work RVU threshold or TVU threshold in order to achieve that base salary? Do you have a large teeter-totter? You have some very highly productive physicians, maybe 13, 14,000 work RVUs, and a low producing physician, maybe 4 or 5,000 work RVUs. How do you equilibrate that so you don't have unrest within your practice? So that's a really good target to look at. Do you have a call wind down policy in place? Do you have a retirement policy in place? All those critical things. It's not just about that paycheck every 2 weeks. It's really about how you have structured your entire physician compensation. So hopefully this podcast has helped you make your practice a bit more perfect. Hopefully it's helped answer a few of those physician compensation components. We hope to have a number of elements on the website to help facilitate you, and we invite you to join us in our webcasts that are online as it relates to physician compensation, always a topic near and dear to our hearts. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day.
This is Mike Valentine, host of the podcast series, Practice Made Perfect. Thanks for joining us today, and please remember to join us online at acc.org or wherever you get your podcasts, where you can find all the other episodes in this series. In addition, acc.org has additional tools and resources, such as slides and articles, which will help you navigate these complicated topics. They should be easy for you to find and easy for you to use. Thank you again.